Hey, this is Adam Richman from Food Network UK, and you are feasting your ears on the Hotspur podcast. Come on, you Spurs.
Yeah, well, welcome to a brand new season and a brand new Hotspurs podcast. I am Steve. I'm in Leon C in Essex. We haven't got Colin this week. He's on holiday, but what a fantastic replacement we've got. All the way from Tottenham is a legend, and it is Gary Stevens. How are you doing, Gary?
I'm very well indeed, thank you, and thanks for inviting me on.
No problem. We've had some terrific guests over the past few years. I normally start by saying this, and it's true. I've met you a couple of times. You wouldn't have remembered me, of course, because you meet thousands of people every year, and you were absolutely fantastic. So nice, so kind, answered all my questions, and I'd had a couple of beers, so I did definitely ask you a few, and you were brilliant. I'll tell you what it was, the last time I saw you was at the Man United Carling Cup final.
Okay.
We was at the hotel, and I know listeners know this, but my dad's quite good friends with Mike England, so we was on his table. And yeah, I spotted you, and I can't remember if you were speaking to Mickey Hazard or someone, but yeah, just came over, and you were brilliant. So there you go.
Good. Well, I do my best, to be honest with you, and I think it's a very important part of any ex or current player's duties, to be honest with you. You know, if fans want to talk to you, if fans want you to sign something, if fans have a question, then I think you need to service that as best as you can. And, you know, some people are better than others at it, possibly. some people are a little bit more outgoing than others. Some are a little bit shy.
Yeah.
And I don't know if players today are different from my era, but I do get the feeling that players from my era used to be more happy to do it as players, and certainly are more happy to do it now than possibly current day players. And maybe that's because of the, the superstar status that has come along now with today's players at the big clubs.
Yeah. Do you not think that when you was playing, was it not that high profile? Do you feel that?
I think definitely it wasn't that high profile. Yeah. You know, I played for Spurs in it was the first ever live TV game on ITV, which they did the full coverage. And that was Spurs played at home against Nottingham Forest in the 83-84 season.
Yeah.
And I think back in those days, the TV companies compensated the clubs on those Sunday afternoon kickoffs if they had a small gate. And I remember the gate at White Hart Lane that afternoon was certainly down. I think a lot of people wanted to watch it on the TV.
Yeah.
But there wasn't that much football on the TV. And you know how powerful the TV is. You know these modern day players, today's players, they've become superstars because they're in everybody's front room so often, aren't they?
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, it was interesting watching the Euro final last night. The last 5 minutes, they didn't even show the game. They just showed Ronaldo on the sideline jumping up and down, which was quite interesting.
Yeah, and again, you know, in my day, when they covered a game on TV, for example, you know, it was covered by four or five cameras. You know,
yeah.
Games are covered by 20 to 30 cameras these days. You know, you really cannot do anything as a player or a member of the coaching staff on the bench without it getting picked up on TV somewhere.
Yeah, you don't scratch your bum as the certain German manager would would.
Oh, I've never done that sort of thing.
let's get into the questions then. Jason McGovern, who I think has met you in Thailand.
I know Jason, yeah.
Yeah, he's questioned, and I love to get straight into it, was about Arsenal. One of my first questions I always think is, what's it like playing against Arsenal? And of course, you scored. So there's a double added bonus there. So if you could just sort of tell us about, that your encounters against the old enemy, and of course, the goal that you scored.
Well, it was always a huge game, and still is a huge game, regardless of where either side might be in the table at the time. You know, you wanted to get those bragging rights. And I think back in back in the 80s when I was playing in those, well, I call it a North London derby, but I get picked up on the fact that, you know, the mob who play in red aren't really from North London. So yeah. So that derby, okay. I never used to enjoy them particularly, to the extent that they often tended to be frantic and a bit of a kick up at times. You know, yeah. I can remember, you know, Graham Roberts putting Charlie Nicholas through the advertising boards on the halfway line at Highbury once. And, you know, they were frantic games, to be fair. And so I didn't over enjoy them. And it was so much about the result. It didn't matter if you played well, if you got beaten, it wasn't what you wanted. You know, you'd almost prefer to have a horrible, scrappy game where you don't play well, but you get the win. And yeah. I guess there aren't that many players who've scored the winner for Spurs in a North London derby or a Spurs Arsenal derby, which I did achieve back in the mid 80s. It was a pretty horrible game, to be fair, and it wasn't a fantastic goal either, but it meant that we won the game 1-0. And I think off the back of that, there was a, well, he's a huge Spurs fan, a guy called Maurice Keston, which I'm sure you know of, Maurice. And I think off the back of that game, if it wasn't that game, it was another game where we beat the Arsenal. He took us all to the Ritz in London and bought us dinner that night, which was very nice, all the players and all their respective wives and girlfriends.
All right.
So those are some of my fond memories, and you know, I don't want to talk about the less fond memories, to be honest with you.
No, but just going back then, obviously you were at Brighton, played in the cup final.
I played in the cup final in 83 for Brighton against Manchester United. I'd been at Brighton Football Club for 5 years from the age of 16. So I was 21 years of age. And against all the odds, we got to the cup final in 83. We'd just spent 4 years in the top flight with Brighton and Hove Albion, the only 4 years that Brighton have ever been in the top flight.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, at the end of the season, we were relegated. The compensation, to some extent, was we'd got to the FA Cup final.
Yeah.
And it
was 2-2, wasn't it? And then a replay.
Yeah, so the first game on the Saturday finished 2-2. It went into extra time. The reason it went into extra time, although we'd gone 1-0 up against Man United, Gordon Smith scored for us. We'd gone 2-1 down, and late on, I scored my first goal of the season that year, which forced it, well, made the score 2-2. It's gone to extra time. It's still 2-2. So we had the replay on the following Thursday at Wembley.
Yeah.
And we don't really want to talk about the result because Manchester United just beat us.
They did. We don't need to go into that. But obviously on the back of that, did you move to Spurs pretty soon after that?
Yeah, I did. I'd actually gone home to Suffolk to see my parents in Suffolk, and it's actually where I'm sat talking to you at the moment. I'm visiting my mother at the moment.
I went to Beccles recently.
It's a nice part of the world, East Anglia. It really is. I like it up here.
Plenty to do. I've got young kids. Plenty to do up there.
There is indeed, yeah. And the pace just slows down a little bit, so it suits me as well. So I'd come home to see my parents, and the then Brighton manager was Jimmy Melia, who had taken us to Wembley for the cup final. He phoned me up and he said that they'd agreed to sell me to Tottenham. Did I want to go?
All right.
And my first reaction was, well, Jimmy, we've just got relegated. If you want us to get promotion next season and back into the top flight with Brighton and Hove Albion, without sounding arrogant, why are you selling, you know, one of your budding stars, one of your better players? Because that's what I believed I was at the time.
Yeah.
And he said, well, you know what it's like, Gary, you know, football is business, and even was business back in 1983, I suppose.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've done the deal. Do you want to go and talk to them?
Yeah.
And I said, well, I it's a fantastic club. Of course I want to go and talk to them. But more importantly, you clearly don't want me, so I might as well go. That was how I felt about it. I was really disappointed that Brighton was selling me, to be fair.
Yeah.
The compensation, of course, was the fact that I was going to a fantastic club in Tottenham Hotspur, which was, you know, way above Brighton and Hove Albion. And that's not to sound disrespectful, but way above the status of Brighton and Hove Albion. And I knew that I was going to, if I ultimately decided to join, and it wasn't a difficult decision to make, I knew I was going to be playing alongside, you know, top class players, international players, you know, Ray Clements, Chris Hughton, Graham Roberts, Steve Perriman, Ozzy Ardiles, Glenn Hoddle, Steve Archibald, people of that ilk. And, you know, it was just a very exciting time for me to move to such a wonderful and huge club that Tottenham were and still are.
Yeah. Keith Birkinshaw, the manager.
Yep.
With Peter Shreve's number two.
Yeah, that's right. When I spoke to Peter Shreve on the phone, and he told me the best way to get to the ground from where I was. So the next day I went down to meet him. He told me that Keith Birkinshaw wouldn't be there because Keith was away.
Yeah.
But while I was at Spurs, I did speak to Keith on the phone as well and had a good chat with Peter Shreve, and you know what the club were looking to achieve, what he thought of me, where I was likely to play, my career path with Spurs, what was achievable, etc.
Yeah.
And then he said, "Oh, hang on a second, somebody's just knocked on the door. Come in." And he said, "Oh, have you met Bill Nicholson before?"
Oh, wow.
And you know, the great Bill Nicholson walked in and said, "Hello, Gary," and stood up and shook his hand. And he then said, "I tell you what, why don't you come with, jump in my car, Gary, and I'll drive you from White Hart Lane. I'll take you out to Cheshunt to the training ground and show you around the training ground and bring you back a little bit later."
Wow.
And, you know, whether it was planned or not, but it was very impressive. And there I am, I'm sat in, you know, alongside Bill in the car driving out. And he says, and obviously if the traffic gets heavy here, if we take a left and then a right and we can nick across the North Circular and we can get out that way And, you know, it was just a wonderful experience. And Bill talking to me about, you know, when he was manager of the club. And it's interesting. One of the things I do remember him saying was, he said, "I can't understand today's players." He said, you know, and the training, he said, you know, "You're all doing stretches and before training, you're doing stretches after training, and you're still pulling loads of muscles." He said, "We never used to do stretches and we never used to get as many muscle strains either." Now, you know, listen, football's had moved on from Bill's time to when I was there in 83. And of course, it's moved on from 1983 to how it is now in 2016 with sports psychologists and, you know, the medical aspect and the prevention of injuries and the rehab from injuries and everything. But you know, after I'd had my little drive out to Cheshunt and back with Bill Nicholson and carried on my discussions with Peter Shreve, and this is gospel. It's kind of been concluded, and I stood up and said, "Thank you very much indeed, Pete. I'm really looking forward to joining your club. I'm going to go back to see my parents and have a chat with them." And he said, "Well, bring them down tomorrow." I said, "Okay, we'll probably come down tomorrow. That'd be great." And I said, "I'm about to say cheerio." And he says, "Do you want to know what we're going to pay you then?" And you know, we hadn't even discussed money. And I just wonder whether, you know, back then compared to now, I would think money is discussed, you know, obviously with an agent these days, before a player is even prepared to walk into a club. It's just a very different era.
Yeah. No, it's, you know, amazing stories, and it just must have been for you, you know, so exciting, you know, to make that change. I mean, so that would have been that summer, and of course, you know, that year, brilliant. I mean, at the time, Spurs, of course, had won the cup final in 81 and 82.
Yep.
So this is now 83, and you've got the UEFA Cup, which was a, you know, For many Spurs fans, a fantastic cup run, and culminating in the final. I know we've had loads of questions about it, and you know, I've got to ask you. It's a massive cliche, and you probably have to answer this every single day. But you're walking up to take the penalty, and I think we all want to know how you were feeling.
Well, I had my mind on one thing only, and there was only one thing that mattered, and that was that I scored.
Yeah.
And that was all that was in my mind.
Nervous?
Well, yeah, of course there was an element of nerves there, but it was interesting because as that UEFA Cup run had gone on during the season. We, you know, the first round was against a team in Ireland called Drogheda, and I think we won about 14 or 15 nil on aggregate home and away.
Yeah. And now you're lucky if you'd nick 1-0s for well, some of these sides.
Possibly, yeah, exactly. But you know, as it had gone on and, you know, we played better teams and the games were tighter and what have you, it was like after the first leg, well, before the second leg, it could go to penalties. And well, actually, if it does, who's going to take the penalties? And Keith Birkinshaw, you know, obviously Steve Archibald would always have one. Graham Roberts would always have one. Mark Falco would always have one. And then it kind of dropped. And Keith Birkinshaw pointed to me, said, "You strike a good ball, Gary. You should have one." I went, OK, fine.
All
right. Of course, it didn't go to penalties. So the next round comes. Who's going to have them? By this stage, I'm saying, well, yeah, go on, I'll have one. And then come the final, I'm saying, yeah, I'll definitely have one because it never goes to penalties, does it? So sure enough, well, after, you know, two games against Anderlecht, home and away, and it's 1-1, and we've played the extra time as well. Tell me it was 1-1 on aggregate. It was, wasn't it? I've not had a brainstorm there,
have I? On aggregate, it was 2-2.
2-2. Good. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
see what happens when you get over 50. Your memory starts to go
problem,
a little bit.
No problem. I won't remind Paul Miller that he did score in the first leg. That's all right.
He did. Maxi scored the header, didn't he? Yeah, exactly. So that was it, because we drew 1-1 out in Belgium and we drew 1-1 at White Hart Lane, of course.
Yeah.
So then you have the extra time and we still don't settle it. And I'm thinking the final whistle goes, I'm still on the pitch. It looks like I'm going to have one of the five penalties.
Yeah. And Tony Parks had saved one. So we were in the driving seat. And I think when you took about, I think it was number three.
Yeah, I took the third penalty.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think there's an easier penalty to take as such, whether it's the first, the third or the fifth penalty, or whether you're into sudden death. So, you know, it's the same, isn't it? And I don't mind games being settled by penalties because I see it as being, it's a discipline and a skill within the game of football. Some people say, oh, it's unfair to decide a game on penalties. I don't agree with that at all. I think it's a discipline and a skill. And I'd rather do it on penalties than spinning a coin, to be honest with you. So, you know, I've stepped up and there's only one thing in my mind. You know, I can't affect what's already happened. I can't affect what is going to happen. All I can do is my bit, and my bit had to be to score. So, yeah, there was some real relief from my perspective once I scored. Yeah, definitely.
And when you're walking up, did you know where you're going to put it?
Yeah, well, we had practiced in training. It wasn't like an official practice as such. You know, after training, you know, the days leading up to the second leg of the final, you know, a few of us would take penalties at the end of training. And it's interesting because I'd only ever taken one penalty before that, which was when I was at Brighton. It was a pre-season friendly. It was back when Alan Mullery was the manager of Brighton. And he had spoken to me about taking penalties. And I followed the advice that he had given me in that pre-season friendly tournament that we had played in and scored my penalty. And I followed exactly that advice and that method of taking the penalty against Anderlecht as well. So, not only did Alan Mullery give me my debut at Brighton Football Club, I think he contributed enormously to my success in that UEFA Cup final penalty shootout as well.
So you knock it in. And you turn and you do this kind of windmill thing. Was that planned or did that just come naturally?
That was purely spontaneous. And I can remember for, you know, a few days after the final, yeah, we were still back in at Chesant, a little bit of recovery training and everything. And of course, the game was being played and the penalties were being shown on the TV on a loop almost at the training ground. There was a bit of Mickey taking going on, to be honest with you. And it was like, I think Mick Shannon used to do that kind of thing when he scored a goal. His arm went round in like a windmill.
Yeah.
I haven't got a clue where it came from because, you know, I was never a prolific goal scorer, so I didn't have a goal scoring celebration. It was purely spontaneous.
I just think whenever you, well, for me and Spurs fans of my age, I mean, I'm 40, whatever, but whenever you see someone do that, you think, oh, it's Gary Stevens' celebration. So
really?
I think it's quite unique. Yeah, definitely.
Okay, good.
So, good stuff. Just back to a couple more questions here on Twitter. We've got Terry Hill, who's asked about the penalty there. We've got the Spurs poet, which is he's in Northern Ireland. He said, I would like to know, having managed in Thailand, do you have any aspirations to manage in the UK?
Well, I would like to manage at more clubs is the answer. I've been assistant manager at Sligo Rovers in Ireland under a guy called Ian Barraclough. I was assistant head coach in Azerbaijan at Gabala under Tony Adams. And when he stepped away, I was head coach for a very brief period of time.
I'm sure there was no Mickey taking there with the
Not a great deal. Not a great deal. Eh? Most recently, I've been out in Thailand where I've been the head coach at two clubs in Thailand, which I've really enjoyed. Didn't last there long enough because, you think they fire coaches quickly in England. You should try Thailand. It's really? Even quicker. So yes, I would like to manage or be the head coach, however they want to give you a title, at a club in England. Of course I would. I think the reason I've gone abroad is it's so very, very difficult to get a job in England.
Yeah.
And I think one of the reasons that's happened is because more and more of the big European coaches are now in charge of clubs in the Premier League because of the money, because the way it's grown and developed. And that's forced some really good English coaches and managers further down the pyramid, which has pushed everybody else further down. And if you go on the League Managers Association website and have a look at the number of managers stroke coaches who are now out of work looking for jobs, you know, it's into the hundreds. It truly is. Mm. And arguably, I sit below most of them because I haven't accrued the experience that most of them have accrued. So I think it's a case of being realistic. As much as I'd love to be the manager or head coach of, you know, a team in the Premier League, it ain't going to happen. It ain't going to happen. As much as I'd love to be the manager or head coach of a team in the Championship, it's really unlikely. And, you know, I applied for a job 3 or 4 years ago for a team that was then in the conference. I knew the chief executive. He said, well, we know who we want. That person's become available. That's why we've sacked our current manager and we think we'll get him, but stick your CV in anyway. Hmm. So sure enough, I did. I didn't get a reply, which is, you know, a bit rude, really, but to be expected to some extent. A couple of months later, I bumped into him once they'd appointed their new manager, head coach. I said, how many people applied for the job? Hmm. He said, just over 130.
Wow.
So, you know, that was a conference side at the time. They're now in the Football League.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is it's very tough to get a job. Very tough.
Well, you know, I know you've done a bit of work at Spurs as well. I remember you just used to do the announcing.
Yeah, it's true. When I first packed up with, you know, playing football, rather than going to coaching and management, I had to go at the media side of it. So I worked for all sorts of media outlets, and there was the opportunity to come and do the pre-match entertainment on the big jumbo screen at White Hart Lane and stay there and do the announcements, etc., etc. So it was a good experience, really. Again, it was nice to be working with Spurs.
Yeah, no, it's good. I've just reminded me of the second time I met you, which was when I was chatting to Paul Coit and you walked past and you had a little bit of a chat there. So I know Paul Coit listens to the show because he knows all my questions. We've got just a couple more questions here, Gareth, if that's all right.
Yeah.
I don't know about this one. I mean, if you're in the dark on this one, please let me know. But someone called Sour Grapes has asked, what did Gazza say to you when you at Goodison when he grabbed you by the neck?
It's interesting that. So that was I'm just trying to think. That must have been 87. I think it was just – no, it couldn't. I'm just trying to think when it was.
He signed in 88.
88, yeah. I remember it. I remember it very well. Basically, Gazza was kind of losing his cool a little bit. I think he'd been booked, and it looked like he was going to get involved in a flare-up with an Everton player, and I've kind of stepped in, and I've got hold of Gazza, pushed him away. I'm saying, like, calm down. And with that, he's virtually turned on me, and he's got his hands around my throat.
He would only be 21 at the time.
Yeah, he's got his hands around my throat and he's berating me because he wants to get to, I can't remember who the Everton player was at the time, to be honest with you. But anyway, the long and the short of it was that he didn't get a second booking and therefore sent off. So I think I kind of did my job in keeping the lid on that situation. Yeah. And subsequently, a couple of days later, you know, he came up to me and he apologized. He said, listen, I'm really sorry. I'd lost my cool. You did me a great favor. I really appreciate that. And I didn't mean to disrespect you. I'm very sorry that I did that. And for me, it was no problem. I thought it was my job on the pitch at the time, being a senior player to Gazza, to actually help him out of a situation that would have got him into possibly some hot water.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what you do with teammates. You help them out, isn't it?
I've spoken to Steve Sedgley and Paul Allen and the rest, and they just, the stories they tell about Gazza. The thing is, I reckon the public like me probably only know about 5% of the crazy stories. I'm sure most of them we could never tell that in public because just absolutely mad.
Trust me, if you know 5%, you know an awful lot.
But, you know, for you know, we've got Gazza, we've got Glenn Hoddle, Chris Waddle. Again, I asked them, we had John Pratt on the show, and I sort of said, oh, I'm going to spring this on you, go through your greatest side that you ever played with, like, you know, that on the programme they do on Sky.
Yeah.
Or Merson, where they go through. We won't do that now, obviously, but maybe another time. But some of those names. Spurs have just had a collection. I don't think we can be topped in terms of individual brilliant players with flair and the play the way they, you know, the game should be played, particularly in that 80s side, the 84, 85 and 87. What a side that 87 side was.
Yeah, you know, I was without doubt privileged to have 7 years or almost 7 years at Tottenham. And I think it was a period at the club where there was just so much talent. When I joined, I know Ricky Villa had just left, but Ozzy was there. Ray Clements was in goal, for example. People who came, and you've mentioned a few, you know, like Richard Gough, what a player he was. You know, he came after I joined the club. But I played alongside him for a while. You know, Mabsy, of course.
Yeah.
And then when you look at the you know, some unbelievable players like Chrissy Waddle, like Glenn Hoddle, for example.
Clive Allen scoring 49 goals.
Yeah. You know, Lineker at the club as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, just it actually almost takes my breath away when I sit down quietly and I start writing down the names of the players that I played alongside. Not just for England, but, you know, at Spurs, there was just megastars all over the show. Great players.
Fantastic. And then just final couple of questions here from a guy called Spurs Memory Man. We've spoken about the 87 side. He's asking about Terry Venables and what he was like as a coach and a manager. And, you know, what was he like?
Well, I like Terry very much. People ask me about the coaches and managers that I've played under, and of course they're all different. I think Terry was probably, for me, the best technical coach and tactical coach that I played under. And Terry, in actual fact, after he came to the club, he signed Steve Sedgley, and Steve Sedgley came in to, in effect, replace me. And the process started, and next minute I was out of the club and I'm down on loan at Portsmouth, and eventually I signed for Portsmouth and I left Spurs. So it was actually Terry who shifted me out of Spurs. That said, when I was doing my pro licence about 4 or 5 years ago, you know, one of the things I had to do was I had to go and interview somebody in football and ask them and get a background on why they wanted to and why they got involved in coaching. And I tried to contact Glenn and Glenn Hoddle, and he wasn't available for various reasons. I contacted Terry and he was a bit... Anyway, and in the end, I was able to sit down with Terry. He said, yeah, I'll give you an hour. And 4 hours later, we were still sitting in a West London hotel talking football. And, he was fantastic value then. And he's helped me with my coaching qualifications. And he was fantastic value as a coach, I thought, as well.
Yeah, just a top football man. Just one final one from me. Obviously with the Euros just gone, they show a lot of coverage of the last few World Cups and what have you. And of course, you did go to Mexico. And did you? Was it the Paraguay you played in?
Yeah, I made two substitute appearances in the World Cup finals in Mexico 86. I came on as a sub in one of the group games, which was against Morocco. People remember it for the fact that Brian Robson dislocated his shoulder. Yeah. Ray Wilkins got sent off, so we were down to 10 men.
I remember it was on about 12 o'clock at night, and I was about 10 or 11 years old, and my dad had let me stay up, and he watched it, and I just remember looking at my dad half the time, like, because he was just, you know, head in hands, shaking his head, thinking, what is going on?
Well, we had a shocking start because we lost their first game to Portugal. Then we drew with Morocco with only 10 men. And then the third game, we beat Poland, which meant we progressed. And in the round of 16, in effect, we played Paraguay, which was the game you referenced a minute ago. And I came on as a sub in that game. Peter Reid was injured, so he came off and I went into the middle of midfield in that game. Yeah,
and set up Gary Lineker?
Yeah, you're right. It was, you know, and again, because you know that he can do it. I made a run into the box when Glenn Hoddle had the ball, and you know, Hodge picked me out, and he doesn't just find you. He kind of puts it where you can then deal with it easy, and
with a bit of spin and.
Yeah, a little bit of check side, you know, maybe chalk the end of his boot or something. So, you know, he puts it there, and really what he's saying, he's gone, just cross it first time, and I know I can cross it first time, and we got Lineker up front, and I know Lineker will make that run because he just makes that run. So just cross it first time across the face of the six-yard box along the ground without even having to look, and Gary Lineker tucked it in the back of the net. So, you know, helped Gary Lineker get his golden boot that year at the World Cup.
Absolutely, you did. And, you know, I think you know, finishing off here, I think we need look no further than Glenn Hoddle as the England manager and you as his number two. Yeah, there you go. Sorted.
Start blowing the trumpet. Go on, get out there.
Absolutely. Well, listen, it's been absolutely fantastic having a chat with you. You know, anytime I'm up at Spurs, you still get to the games?
Well, because I've spent the bulk of the last couple of years in Asia, I haven't been to too many games. Last season I went to the Europa League game when Spurs played at home against Anderlecht, in actual fact. That was kind of a bit down memory lane for me, so I did that. I'm hoping to see more games at White Hart
Lane. Get to Wembley, maybe?
Go to Wembley, that would be very nice.
Yeah, for the church.
But my plans at the moment are to possibly return to Asia on, you know, there's a couple of job opportunities out there maybe for me. Plus, I've had a good time out there. Plus, England is quite difficult, as I said earlier, for jobs. So, listen, you know, the world of Gary Stevens is never straightforward and easy, but it's been terrific speaking to you. And, you know, my hopes and wishes for, you know, the coming season for Spurs is that they have an excellent season, that they do well in the Champions League, that they push for the Premier League title. You know, it'll be a tough season, make no mistake about it, because other clubs are strengthening, and when you look at the new coaches that have joined different clubs in the Premier League, it certainly won't be easy. But, you know, I think Maurizio Pochettino's doing great work. I think he's got some great talented players there. Of course, they're looking to add, they have added, and they're looking to add to the squad. So, you know, my hopes are that the 2016-2017 season is a winning season for Spurs.
Yeah, I think that's right. And we just want to keep it going, maintain it. Hopefully no one drops. And we've got a few little surprises in there as well with some of the players we haven't seen so much. But I was going to say, you know, if I'm ever up at Spurs and I bump into you, I'll make sure I'll tell you who I am, put a name to the face. And anyway, fantastic. Thanks ever so much for chatting to us.
An absolute pleasure.
Yeah, no problem. All right. Thanks ever so much, Gary. I'll speak to you again soon.
Cheers. Keep well.
Thanks a lot. Bye now.